Get 15% off a set of BrakeBest Select, Select Pro, or Import Direct brake pads and two rotors now at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
This is Jessica, and you're listening to the Asian Madness Podcast. Turkmenistan, a country bordering Iran and several countries that also end with Stan, including Kazakhstan, Uzbekistan, and Afghanistan. It is a mid-sized country located in Central Asia. To its west, though, it sits along the Caspian Sea, which is a nice little change of scenery from all those other countries. Size-wise, it is about 190,000 square miles, and population as of recent is about 6.5 million. Turkmenistan is the least populated country in Central Asia, and while size-wise it is close to the size of Spain, its population is only about 1/7 of Spain. It's also worth noting that a large chunk of Turkmenistan is not actually inhabitable because of its deserts, so most of the people live around the borders, and the middle part of the country sits pretty much empty of humans. The capital and largest city is Ashgabat, which is located in the southern central portion of the country. Turkmenistan historically also played a big role in the Silk Road's southern route, but we can touch on that a bit later. The official language is Turkmen, which is also the same word used for a person from Turkmenistan. Before podcasting, I did sometimes get confused over the difference between Turkish and Turkmen. I know, a little lame, but at least I know now. So remember, Turkish people are from Turkey, a whole different country. Because of its history and location, there are quite a few different ethnic groups living in Turkmenistan. The majority of the population, though, identify as Turkmen. But around 15% of the population include Uzbeks, Russians, Kazakhs, and several other of its neighbors. Religion-wise, over 90% of the population are Muslim, which is logical considering its geographical location and history. A small percentage, though, identify as Christians. The word Turkmenistan is believed to be divided into two parts, Turkmen and Stan. Some say the country's name means the land of the Turks, while some others believe it is a combination of the word Turk and Iman, as in the word faith in Islamic teachings. Turkmens are an ethnic group derived from the collective Turkic group, and there are five tribes labeled under Turkmen people. And most Turkmen can trace their lineage back into any of the five main tribes. Earliest records for this country is a bit unknown, though archaeologists believe that present-day Turkmenistan was already inhabited by humans around the Bronze and Iron Age. Historical documentation began to pick up around 2000 BCE, when the Indo-Europeans and BMAC societies began to inhabit the land. And what is BMAC? It stands for Bactria Margiana Archaeological Complex. And I know, it probably doesn't explain anything. It's basically a term that encompasses several Bronze Age civilizations around southern Central Asia, which included different areas, eras, and phases. It's pretty complicated, and it would take like an hour to go into that, so let's move on. Fast forward to the year 4 BCE, the man we know of as Alexander the Great enters the chat. He was aiming for South Asia, and his route happened to cross Central Asia, so I guess, why not? He even named a city after himself, Alexandria. But that city later changed its name to Merv, also known as one of the oldest cities in the world, along the Silk Road. So while Alexander the Great was alive, he took over the country we know of as Turkmenistan. But once he died, others began to invade and took over quickly. The Parthians, warrior-type people from northern Iran, made their way into the southern part of Turkmenistan, near the current capital city of Ashgabat. For years, this area thrived and people settled along the river, which meant that conditions were pretty nice. Interestingly, they began to raise silkworms, and it makes me wonder how and why someone even starts doing it. You see these worms and suddenly you decide that, hey, let's farm these guys. It's very fascinating to think how everything came about at some point in history. So knowing that they were raising silkworms, this then brings us back to the topic of Silk Roads. The route connecting China to Iraq meant that they would pass through Turkmenistan, which in turn made this area very valuable. A few hundred years later, around the 8th century CE, the Arabs raided the area and present-day Turkmenistan fell under the Islamic Caliphate. This explains why the country is largely Muslim now, and many of its neighboring countries can also relate to this. The ancient city once known as Merv, now known as Mary, was a major hub during this time. A new dynasty was declared by a Persian general, who then later went on to invade present-day Iran and Iraq. Moving on, the Arabs were eventually kicked out around the year 873 when the Safavid dynasty took over. But not for long, as the Samanids came along and took over in the year 901. This reign again did not last long, and along came the Ghaznavids and eventually the Seljuks. The Seljuk Empire was pretty big at one point, covering parts of present-day Iran, Iraq, Syria, and Asia Minor. The city known as Merv at the time continued to flourish. It was known as an agricultural hub, an economic center, and of course, a major stop along the Silk Road. But all good things must come to an end. The Seljuk reign was beginning to deteriorate in the mid-11th century, where tribes began to revolt and attack the city of Merv. Finally, sometime in the 12th century, the Seljuk Empire went away and the Turkmen gained their independence as a tribe. So something else happened in the 12th century, something many other countries also experienced. That's right, the invasion of freaking Genghis Khan and the Mongol Empire. It's very crazy to think how far and wide him and his people traveled and conquered. Once they arrived at present-day Turkmenistan, they began to destroy cities, including the famous Merv. Not only was the city destroyed, Genghis Khan also ordered his men to kill all the inhabitants and destroy all facilities and systems. Once Genghis Khan did what he wanted, the area was then handed over to Chagatai Khanate, basically just another Mongol Khanate. Things kind of started to get back to normal, just a lot less populated, and in the late 14th century, Amir Timur decided to take over Turkmenistan, which marked the Timurid Empire. Like many of its predecessors, though, this empire did not last very long and soon broke down after Timur's death. After that, the Turkmen took over their own country and became independent once again. Because of the Mongol invasion, much of the country ended up doing its own thing, which created various tribes and political groups. In the aftermath of such suffering, it's only normal for those remaining to want to band together and form a somewhat functioning society. There wasn't a lot of peace around the 17 and 1800s, though, as there were wars mainly involving Iran, Afghanistan, Khiva, and Bukhara, both of which no longer exist. A lot of moving around, empires forcing their way in, you know, regular history stuff. During the 1800s, there apparently was a lot of slave trade going on, and a lot of the slaves were captured and provided by Turkmen tribes, offered up to the Kievan and Bukhara Khanates. The Russians were allegedly not impressed with this long-standing slave trade of these two Khanates, as some of those kidnapped were Russians, so they decided to start attacking them. Various battles were fought, thousands of Turkmen died, and eventually in 1881, the Treaty of Akhal was signed, where the territory of Turkmenistan was handed over to the Russians, making them part of the Russian Empire. At around the same time, Russia began building a railroad that would connect Russia to the Caspian Sea, and once the project was finished in 1906, many Russians started arriving in Turkmenistan, much to the displeasure of the locals. I think we touched on this in a previous episode, where Russia wanted to send their people to their other territories to establish a presence or something. It wasn't a pleasant integration, though. And in short, they tended to bully the locals and abuse their power, all the while not doing much to help the country. So the October Revolution, or the Bolshevik coup, took place in 1917. And in 1922, the USSR was officially formed. What does that mean for Turkmenistan? Once known as Turkestan ASSR, their name was changed to Turkmen SSR, or Soviet Socialist Republic. This was the point where the borders of Turkmenistan was officially established. Remember, a lot of history involves losing and gaining parts of other regions, so country borders are never really set in stone until the modern era. As a former republic of the USSR, Turkmenistan began to industrialize and grow, and it was during Soviet reign where they discovered that they had been sitting on one of the largest natural gas fields in the world. Like many Soviet republics, Turkmenistan did not gain independence until around the fall of the USSR, in the year 1991. The first elected president of the country was actually the former Communist Party leader of Turkmen SSR, Saparmurat Niyazov. And he was one of those presidents for life, where he stayed in office until 2006, the year he died. So now that they're no longer part of the USSR, the new political party changed its name to the Democratic Party of Turkmenistan, or the DPT. Interestingly, a few oppositional political parties came up in the subsequent years, but some say that that's just to create the illusion of democracy, because the other parties were all fans of the DPT's policies. Even though elections were held, it was widely believed that they were rigged. I don't know how Turkmen feel about Niyazov, but it was said that he was not a great guy. He seemed to be obsessed with himself, made a bunch of irrelevant changes to the country, and ordered his biography to be required reading material in all schools. He banned so many things that we take for granted, like the internet, libraries, free press, beards, ballet, opera, etc. The country, despite shaking off the USSR, became a very isolated country with lack of multiple resources, even at one point known as the country with the lowest life expectancy in Central Asia. The second president, a dentist-turned-politician named Gurbanguly Berdimuhamedow, was elected in 2007. It's a very difficult name. I definitely pronounced it all wrong. I'm so sorry. In a way, he was less obsessed with himself than the previous president. He abolished and reversed many policies that he found unreasonable, such as uncensoring web access, allowing foreign languages in schools, reforming education and healthcare, and giving back pensions to the elderly. Yeah, the previous president took that away from the elderly because he wanted it for his regime. In some ways, though, the next president was still considered quite authoritarian, but just not as terrible as the previous guy. Maybe you've seen that video online of Putin and him shaking hands and grabbing a puppy. It's a pretty interesting video. So, if I can find it, I will share it on my Instagram. The current president is a guy named Serdar Berdimuhamedow. And, not so shocking, he's Gurbanguly's son. I guess the presidency is very likely passed on within the family. So that was Turkmenistan's story in, like, minutes. Doesn't do it any justice, but hopefully you learned something. I'm super excited to share some fascinating facts about this country, because it's such an unknown country to many of us. For one, the city of Ashgabat is a city known with the highest density of marble buildings in the entire world, and it is in the Guinness Book of World Records. Some have described the city as being very surreal, kind of like a mix between Las Vegas and Pyongyang, or a mix between Disney and Pyongyang, Pyongyang being the capital of North Korea. It's a bizarre concept, but extremely fascinating. Another world record they have is them being home to the largest indoor Ferris wheel, which is kind of neat. Turkmenistan is also known as one of the countries ranked lowest in the World Press Freedom Index, only a bit above North Korea. This also makes Turkmenistan one of the least visited countries in the world, and if you want to visit Turkmenistan, you will need to obtain a visa. I heard it's kind of difficult to get one, but let me know if you've done it. So I mentioned previously that the first president, Niyazov, had his own biography that was required reading material for basically every citizen. That's not even the weird part. Niyazov apparently also ordered all mosques to keep a copy of his biography because God said so, and he even launched one into space in 2005 in order to quote-unquote conquer space. Some of the most valued things in Turkmenistan include horses, as they are home to one of the rarest breeds in the world. One last thing though, because of the abundance of natural gas found in the country, some utilities are basically free for all the citizens at some point. That's a pretty good deal. I know some people hate my history intros, but I find it kind of interesting and informative. And to be real, most of us know nothing about Asia except bits and pieces here and there, and most of that is probably regarding East Asia, like China, Japan, or Korea. While most times my historic bits don't really relate to the case I present, today's case actually will be kind of related, mostly the people though. It's unfortunately not going to be a very long episode, because the information I have is somewhat limited, but I will do my best to present what I have for you. So, a lot of parents out there love signing their kids up to various activities and events. For example, some want their kids to learn instruments, some want them to take part in sports, or perhaps the kids themselves show an aptitude and interest towards something specific, and if they're lucky, they might just be really good at it. That's what today's case is about. A gifted young boy who excelled at something, but because of the actions of others, he will never be able to do what he loved ever again. This is the case of a young man named Süleyman Tursunbev, only 14 years old when he was brutally murdered. Apologies again, my pronunciation will suck, but I promise I am trying. Let's begin. I don't have too much background information regarding today's victim, but online sources indicate that he was from an area called Dashoguz in Turkmenistan, located in the north, close to the border of Uzbekistan. Born in the year 2006, he seemed to have come from a loving and supportive family of Uzbek descent, and as a young child, he took a lot of interest in different kinds of sports. As he was approaching the end of sixth grade, he found out that he was accepted at a boarding school that not just specialized in training young athletes, but actively prepared them for different categories in the Olympics. In other words, people in this school were seen as future Olympians. The cream of the crop kind of thing. Despite how isolated countries like Turkmenistan and even North Korea appear, these countries actually do participate in the Summer Olympics. Turkmenistan joined as an independent country starting in 1996, and so far, they have received one silver medal in the 2020 Tokyo Olympics. So what exactly is Süleyman's expertise? His focus was in judo, and if you're unfamiliar, it's a Japanese-style martial art. The objective seems to be, quote, to clearly throw, to pin, or to master the opponent, unquote. I am no martial artist, so this sounds pretty cool to me. So of course, his series of training eventually led him to participate in some friendly games and competitions. Sure, it was aimed to find the best athletes to represent Turkmenistan in future Olympic Games, but he was still a child. They were determined, but it should have also been fun, in some ways.
How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month?
They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster.
That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.
On January 20th, 2021, yes, during COVID, when Süleyman was 14, he was sent to the city of Bahardeb in the Ahal province, about 100 kilometers northwest of the capital, for a competition. His opponent, though, was not someone he was familiar with. It was a young cadet from a higher educational institute. By the sound of it, his opponent, though, gave off very strong connection to powerful figures vibes. Why do I say this? Because prior to the competition, Suleiman and his coach were approached by somebody, or perhaps a few somebodies, involved in the organization of the competition, and they were told to not take the competition too seriously. This was not any kind of pep talk, it was a veiled threat. They basically told him to not compete too seriously and let the other guy win. This is why some feel like the other person was either favored, had powerful connections, or perhaps someone was betting on this competition. Hard to say. What would you do in this situation? You were not aware of this being the plan. People only told you the day of. But just because they told you, or lightly threatened you, would you consider it? Either reaction would be understandable. You don't know what will happen if you ignore them, and when. But it would also make sense if it made you uneasy, and you didn't want to find out what would happen otherwise. What did Suleiman do? Let's see. He had been training hard at judo. He wanted to go to bigger competitions in the future, including the Olympics. Why would he willingly let himself lose? If he did lose, it would be fair and square. On top of his ambition, he was just a kid. Would he have 100% understood the hints and implications the officials made? Telling him to chill and not take the competition too seriously? Or else? Either way, he did not do as was suggested. He did his best during the competition, and, unsurprisingly, he won first place. He was awarded and announced the winner in his weight group. That's amazing, right? It would have been if people weren't such shits and sore losers. Clearly, his opponent was no match for him, or else why would they even need to ask him to go easy on the match? This is where things go from not great to terrible. After he was awarded with medals and certificates, the young boy vanished. Like, I don't mean days later or on his way home. It seemed like he was there 1 second during the competition, and once it was over, he was gone. But what happened to him? Where did he go? It's probably not too hard to guess what happened. Not long after his sudden disappearance, police began to receive calls about the body of a young boy lying on the side of the street, severely beat up and bloodied. The ambulance arrived, and during the commotion, they found out that it was indeed Suleiman. He was still alive, but had been beaten so severely. He was taken to the nearest hospital, which was located in the capital of Ashgabat, but upon arriving, he was denied medical care. I know, sounds kind of crazy. I get that it was during COVID, but this child is not there for like a paper cut. He was hanging on for dear life. But why was he denied, you wonder? Because he did not have the proper documentation to be treated at a hospital in Ashgabat. He was not a registered citizen, therefore he had to go to a hospital in the city he was registered as a civilian. I don't really know much about the Hippocratic Oath, but it does seem like a variation of it exists within most countries around the world. Interestingly, when President Niyazov was in office during the 2000s, he banned the Hippocratic Oath of physicians and replaced it with an oath to himself. So everyone was just swearing to be good to him. I believe that that was reversed once he died, but it seems like regulations on where he can seek medical care still stood. As mentioned, Suleiman's family was from the northern region of Dashaguz. So once they were denied, he had to travel over 500 kilometers just to get to a hospital that would treat him. His parents, of course, were worried sick and completely heartbroken upon seeing their son like this. They were at the competition and they were so proud of him, but all that joy was completely overshadowed. His parents drove him on January 22nd, 2 days after the match. He was finally admitted into a local hospital in his registered region. But even after being admitted, things were weird. It was found that Suleiman suffered a variety of injuries, both internal and external, including bruised genitals, ruptured abdominal organs, a cracked skull, and many of his teeth were also gone. His parents were there the entire time, but to their surprise and dismay, they felt like the hospital was kind of slacking. Knowing his injuries, it didn't seem like the doctors took extra effort in treating him, and it was even stated that they never even took x-rays of the boy. This is, of course, hearsay, because I cannot prove that the doctors were slacking. Regardless of what you believe, Suleiman eventually succumbed to his injuries and passed away on January 27th. He was buried the following day. Now, what exactly happened to Suleiman and how did he end up with such terrible injuries? This part is not too difficult because between the time Suleiman was found and when he died, he had told his mother that he was taken away and attacked by a group of, quote, grown men, pumped up athletes, because he did not throw the match as they had demanded before the competition, unquote. Imagine that. Sure, he was warned and all, but I highly doubt that he was even aware that this brutal beating was going to come if he did not follow their orders. Not just Suleiman, though. His coach was also said to have been severely beaten up for not following their quote-unquote recommendations. The next question would be, who was involved? Please take the following bits with a grain of salt, because a lot of news sources I got my information from cannot seem to 100% verify their information either. Not because they're lazy journalists, but more likely because of the people involved and the way the press is likely monitored and controlled. So according to one source from ACCA Media, Suleiman's competitor that day just so happened to be a relative of a man named Serdar Berdimuhamedov. And if that sounds familiar because it's such a mouthful, well, yes, Serdar was the son of the then president. Connections, clearly. I guess seeing that the competitor was the president's distant relative, some ass-kissers thought it would be grand if he won, and not Suleiman, a random kid with no political family connections. As for who was involved in the beating, many sources indicated that some of the bodyguards of the president's nephews were involved, and some other random teenagers, and even the president's son. But no one really can say for sure, because the investigation is anything but transparent and smooth. An independent news source attempted to speak to the school that Suleiman attended, but apparently officials were not allowed to speak to independent media sources, probably because of a tight leash and the sensitivity of this case. This journalist eventually found a way to speak to a school deputy director, but what they said was nowhere close to the story I presented. Quote, since September 1st, 2020, up to these days, there have been no wrestling tournaments of any kind, neither inside the school nor outside, unquote. They also added that the ban on such events was imposed by the government to prevent the spread of infectious diseases. Quote, students from the region live in a dormitory under constant supervision of their coaches, unquote. So the competition supposedly took place in January of 2021, but according to this source, no tournament of any kind had taken place in September of 2020. How is that possible? Someone is lying here. The journalist further asked about Suleiman and what caused his death, if it wasn't because of a fixed match gone wrong. Oh, Suleiman? He died because he had a tooth extracted at the dentist and the bleeding didn't stop, and he died. At least that's what the school said. Can this happen? Well, yes, anything can happen. Toothaches are insane and they can cause so much harm to us, even kill us at times. But do you think this was likely in Suleiman's case? As for the Turkmen community, no one really seemed to buy his tooth explanation. Most people believe that this was a cover-up, and that Suleiman was targeted for not helping his opponent win, coupled with the fact that he was ethnically Uzbek. The investigation also went nowhere. As of February of 2021, the prosecutor's office allegedly were told to not pursue the investigation. This order most likely came directly from the president's office. As for Suleiman's parents, they continued to appeal to the public and even to the president himself to continue the investigation, to find those who murdered their beloved child. Of course, they would. What kind of parent would just be like, oh, that sucks, move on? The tournament organizers, of course, were also criticized, but at the time the articles were published, they had not commented on the accusations of trying to fix the match. I cannot really see anyone admitting any kind of guilt, really. They probably didn't even see this boy as a person, and even if someone agreed that concealing the truth was wrong, what could they have possibly done? Go against the president and his entire groupie? You can probably imagine what could happen to them if they spoke out. This also brings us to the discussion on sportsmanship, specifically in Turkmenistan. It seems like match fixing is not a new thing there, nor is it anywhere else, I guess, but for it to lead to such violence is almost unheard of there. It could be because most people have decided to go along with the match fixing out of fear, and perhaps others did get a beating, like Suleyman, but just not to the same extent. Turkmen news sources indicated that a possibility as to why sport competitions can lead to such outcomes is largely due to the idea of who can be a winner. As you already know, the previous president basically passed his presidency down to his son. Yes, there was an election, but most people did not think it was a clean one. Because of this entitlement, people with power come to believe that they deserve things, simply because they are from a good or connected family. Hard work? Fairness? That's for suckers. I can't say for sure if the investigation into his death is still ongoing or not. If it is, I really don't see this going anywhere, as one of those alleged attackers is the current president, and those others are also linked to him. Turkmen, not just in Turkmenistan, but also around the world, tried to get investigators to work on this case, and they even brought it to the attention of the United Nations. Is anything going to happen? No clue. It's already been more than 3 years, and as much as I hate to be a Debbie Downer, I believe that this case will ultimately be closed out. Something really odd I must mention as well. After Suleyman's death, his mother was, quote, taken to Ashgabat. It is unknown who took her. The woman has not yet returned home, unquote. This is very scary. I have no idea what this is about. Maybe those who took her were police conducting police work? Or maybe there were goons connected to the president's family? I wasn't able to find further information on this case, but if anyone out there knows anything, please let me know. So, there you have it. The unjust punishment a young boy received for competing in a match, fair and square. He paid the ultimate prize for winning, despite being told not to. In an ideal world, match fixing would never happen. And if it did happen, everyone would go against it and give it their best, teaching everyone around them a lesson in hard work and perseverance. The world is extremely unfair, though. And even in the most developed and progressive countries, we still have people feeling entitled because of who their father is or who their grandmother was. Despite Suleyman's parents' attempts at contacting news sources and even uploading videos on YouTube, it doesn't seem like they've received the conclusion they wanted. He was only 14, so young, and could have had a chance to make it to the Olympics to represent his country, make his country proud of him. Quote, our son dreamt of raising Turkmenistan's flag in America, of becoming a champion. He said that the president of Turkmenistan himself would shake his hand, unquote. That also goes to show how highly regarded the president in Turkmenistan is, even to average civilians. Do you really think this was a match fix gone wrong? Or do you think the toothache theory makes more sense? I really don't know, but I would love to hear your thoughts. I guess either way could work, but if it was a toothache, then why would they come up with all this stuff about a match fixing? And isn't it kind of dangerous to accuse the president and all his family of killing their son? Thank you all for tuning in to this case. I know it was a bit shorter than the others, but I really wanted to bring light to lesser-known cases and to open our eyes to what's going on in the world. Please remember to be kind, be safe, be fair, and till next time.